Hey, Bill and Gunner, welcome to Blackwall Tribal Edition. Murumyu here with you today. We've got the all-star lineup, Yirrilum, Bumi and Ganyara. And today we'll be talking about a number of things. But one of the things that we have an interest in is called pseudo-law. And pseudo-law is something that sort of looks like law, but it's not really law. And it's about, I think it's the sovereign citizen movement, basically, in a nutshell, which is a damaging movement to Aboriginal sovereignty and to the rule of law within the UN state, so member states rather. But the ABC did something last year about that, and so let's take a bit of an educational resource for the Australians. And whether you believe it or not, it's another thing, but that's up to you to really seek the truth and to see what the law of the land is all about.
Do sovereign citizens' claims have any legal basis? If you have no idea what I'm talking about, you may remember videos during lockdown of people refusing to wear masks because it
doesn't apply to me.
Or drivers arguing with police officers like this.
You know, to appear again today for disqualified driving. Okay?
Okay, but I don't drive. I haven't been driving.
That's all right. Who drove the car here?
I didn't drive here. I travelled here.
How did the car get here?
I moved it.
You moved it by controlling the controls of the car?
Yes, that's right.
Thank you, that'll do.
Yeah, I didn't drive it though.
As I said to my dad on the last day of school is, I think I need a lawyer. Found one. This is Marilyn. Hey, Marilyn. What is a sovereign citizen?
They're a very diverse group, loosely affiliated, not a tight-knit group at all. They have one common thread, and that is they're opposed to government. They regard government as illegitimate and having no authority over them.
So they're like, you can't tell me what to do, you're not my real government. The stepdad defence.
Yes, exactly. Sovereign citizens believe that laws only apply to them if they consent to them.
So that's why they say stuff like,
I do not consent.
It's not true that a law doesn't apply to you if you don't consent to it. Australian courts have made this point many times.
But maybe they successfully challenge their cases once they get to court?
No.
Who are you?
This is my office and you're trespassing.
I do not consent.
Well, I was a magistrate for 22 years and not only haven't they succeeded in my court, but nowhere in Australia have the sovereign citizen arguments succeeded. And I'll have the wig too, please. They all get thrown out.
But sovereign citizen websites have a whole page of testimonials where people from all states have successfully fought using their information and won. See, it's on their website.
All of those testimonials are either false or the reported decisions simply don't exist, and I've looked for them.
Are you trying to say to me that the sovereign citizen websites are bullshit?
That's exactly the right legal term.
So there's no chance that maybe you would have missed a case?
Not a chance. Not in the magistrate's court, not in the district court, in the Supreme Court, in the family court, in the AAT.
Got it.
Nowhere in any court have any of these arguments ever succeeded.
So where does the idea that people can just opt out of laws come from?
It comes from a very idiosyncratic belief that you can separate the legal or corporate aspects of a person and their natural or living person.
Sovereign citizens believe there is the living person, aka flesh and blood human being, aka you that came out of your mum, and the legal person, which is just an administrative concept only created when a government issues someone with documentation of the state, like, say, a birth certificate.
Sovereign citizens believe that they can reject their legal personality and therefore laws don't apply to them and their natural living personality is unfettered by any of the restrictions that typically apply to all of us.
Okay, and that's why they say this sort of thing.
And I'm not property of the state, so you can't take me.
It is my right as a living woman to do whatever I want.
So can I, as a living person, do whatever I want?
Of course not.
No.
Boring. Okay, so where do they get these ideas from?
The idea that you can separate, you know, your personalities is idiosyncratic to sovereign citizens. If you go back in English legal history, we can look at slavery and can see, well, there we had a separation of legal personality and slaves being treated as property.
I mean, that sounds like a legal basis to me.
Well, it might have been 200 years ago, but it certainly hasn't been since.
So I appreciate that you have a diploma in the rules or whatever.
A master's in law.
But did you know that the country, known formally as the Commonwealth of Australia, is registered in the US Securities and Exchange Commission as a corporation? It says it right here on the website.
That's so that they can trade in exchange and shares and the like in America. That doesn't actually have any implications in terms of Australian law whatsoever.
And I think you'll find if your name is in all capital letters, like on, for example, your driver's license, that refers to you as a legal person, which is why I have made an individual recognition card, which features my name in lowercase and hyphenated.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that argument so many times, and it's never held up in any court, anywhere.
And if I attach one of these to my car, it refers to me, the living Lou, as a person who is travelling in private property, not driving, which means the police can't stop me or fine me for any reason.
The difference between driving and travelling is unknown in any Australian law. There were some really old common law rules relating to that in England back in the 15th and 16th century, but they haven't been in existence since then.
What sovereign citizens offer is a fantastical, mythical version of the law that has no contact with reality. And I'm concerned that it exploits vulnerable people, people who see something on the internet, pay money for a script about how they should deal with police officers or why they don't have to pay income taxes. And ultimately, that's to their great disadvantage.
Hang on a second. Is that exploiting or educating?
Have you been doing your own research?
Maybe.
I think it's probably time for you to leave.
Fine. I was just travelling anyway. I'm going to take this. Not going to lie, I was disheartened. Breaking free of the oppressive shackles of the Australian state sounded sweet. Back in the 70s, there was this guy called Prince Leonard who tried to establish his own micronation in Hutt River, Western Australia. He issued his own passports and made his own money, and if he can do it, then...
He also got fined $3 million by the government for unpaid taxes. His micronation was never recognised by anyone. And even his own son told us, it is simply not possible to wake one day and decide that you do not agree with the laws of the land. It's over, Lou. Wrap it up.
So there you go, Candace. According to law experts, the police, the courts, and even the descendants of Prince Leonard, sovereign citizens' claims have no legal basis. Happy?
Good enough.
If you didn't like that answer, I have self-published an ebook with a different answer, which you can purchase at www.sovereigncitizens.com. It's my right as a living person to...
Gunyara, that was interesting. Obviously, the pseudo-law business is something that is damaging. The sovereign citizen movement is basically people who don't want to be under any law, it seems. But we can't have people like that in the Yidinji Nation who want to be above the law because nobody is.
Well, actually, the sovereign citizen movement actually is about people who don't believe in the rule of law. So if they don't believe in the rule of law, you know, well, what do they really believe in? Do they want the world to themselves? So that's the sovereign citizen movement. We just got to be so careful of that and where it's all going. So, you know, when we look at this, hang on, isn't the Yidinji government a government? So, yeah, we are. We're for real and dead set serious about it. And it is the rule of law, by the way. And the law of rules, I'll actually make it clear that it's not only just the rule of law, but the law of rules. And we're here to do the right thing. We were here first. We've never gone away. And we're not back to reclaim something. We just haven't walked away from it. We've always been here. We're just now working out how the application of law works and how it fits into place. And, you know, the Australian citizen is actually a creation of the Commonwealth of Australia to which a human being can participate in that society.
Absolutely. You know, one thing that stands out for me with the pseudo-law is, you know, the interpretation, and we might say it's United Nations interpretation from one aspect. Gunyara, what is the definition of sovereignty in the, you know, what's required to be a sovereign nation?
If you want to talk about sovereignty itself, it's the ability to make man-made law. You know, look, we're like every other animal. You know, we're born, we live, we die, we go back to where we come from, just like a kangaroo or a bandicoot. But we've got the intelligence in between our ears, by the way, that's where it's supposed to be, to create a society of agreement to work together for the betterment of everyone. And the sovereignty is not in the individual itself, you know, because you're created by God, whatever that may be to you, you know, whatever your belief is. And when he's ready for it, he'll take you out of this world and take you wherever you've got to go. So you're not here forever. But the sovereignty he gives you, you hand it up to a society. So if you look, there's a high court case on this. Sovereignty resides in the people of a society. And those people of that society actually give some of their God-given rights up to participate in the life of that society. So that becomes the sovereign nation. There's nowhere in anywhere in the world that anyone can find that the Aboriginal people here on this continent and the island surrounding it have surrendered any of their sovereignty through treaty, agreement, bargain, whatever. There's never been an act of war to conquer the Aboriginal people, because we actually wrote to the government back in 2012. The Commonwealth of Australia said, OK, you better give us the day of declaration of war upon our nation so we could lose some of our sovereignty under battle. And if you've done that, you must have quite obviously a peace date, you know, when peace was called for us to come back again. And they can't do that because it was an act of settlement. It wasn't an act of conquest that took away our sovereignty. What they done is they created another world for the humans to participate in, and like the Pied Piper, and when he played his flute, all the people went over to the Commonwealth of Australia, including the Aboriginal people. They never abandoned their law, but they were just not using it anymore. So the law is always here. It's always been here, and it won't go away, and Yidinji has just revitalised that.
Yeah, I think the Pied Piper thing's a good one, but also that, you know, they were led in chains too and bludgeoned to death and many other things, forced into that world. Bumi, the most important thing is that in your family line, especially as a lawman and a minister for the government, you can't muck around with it because tribal law doesn't change, and you can't dodge things if you've done the wrong thing. Yeah.
Well, see, Dad, Boa, Charlie Ide, one Gribble went to him, just said, you're going to see him. So Dad seen him coming and he told him to go, you're trouble, you know. So he showed him a Bible and a gun. Dad never gave up on it. He told him to go, that's sovereignty. See, most of us, I'm not putting anybody down, I seem to be apologising to everybody, but see, when you come from that root, it's that, that's, it's in you, that you've got power there, you know, and from Dad, no matter where we've been taught, see, that I'll say it again about sovereignty. Sovereignty is a powerful thing for me, and even you know, that you can't use that word like we say land rights, we march and all that, we paint Sheila, all this and that. That's powerful, you know. But just handle the sovereignty, you gotta come from it too. See, that some people maybe never lived that life, although they have original, and I'm not putting anybody down, we're going to sit down and talk, you know. And sovereignty is a big thing for me, and all of us here, you know, Marimu, Gunjara, Yurulam, and sister daughter Ian. It's not a thing to be, it's a good thing, it's a good right thing to do, you know. You can say hello to anybody and this and that, but they'll know. See, when I walk around here or I'm driving and they're at the back of me, they'll go the other way because I look in the mirror. And when I'm walking along the beach or in town here, they'll say, I'll let him go that way, we'll go this way. You see, before, they want to hassle you, you know, when you were at school. But now when you're walking around, I'd like to see you now, they know who you really are. You know, you're standing up for your rights, and they know that we know who we are, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, one of the important things is that you can't, sovereignty's never been ceded, Ganyara. That means it hasn't been extinguished or destroyed or collapsed, and that's the most important thing. But what Colin was saying there was that he can, his father and his father's father's father, carried the law for the Yidinji Nation since the very beginning, which is obviously God has determined that in his wisdom, and that's what's making this very, very strong at the moment.
Well, you see the example there of Boa. Boa couldn't go and seize sovereignty. He didn't take it off the people. They actually believed in the society that Boa was part of. So they handed up some of their God-given rights, you know, to give Boa the respect to go forward to protect the Yidinji Nation. He had law here to protect the Yidinji Nation, and that's the society itself, not himself and not just his family, but it was all the Yidinji, you know, on this part of the world here. Tableland had their lot up there, and they all met together and all believed in the same common goal for the betterment of the Yidinji people, of all the people on here, not just himself and not just one. So Boa was given, He was freely given this authority to go forward as a lawman to represent him. Same with Bumi here now, Uncle, that he is given the authority from the juniors of that society to respect his position as a holder of law. He's not the only sovereign thing. The Yidinji Nation is the sovereign entity to which all people subscribe and believe in for the betterment of all of society, not just for himself. And that's a different thing. When you talk about pseudo-law now, the sovereign citizen movement, they believe that they're a law to himself, that there's no one else above them. Now, hang on a sec, no more. Even those sovereign citizens are trespassing on country here now that has not been ceded, hasn't been lost, hasn't been taken, and we're now starting to reassert the original law that was always here through the connection, through Bumi, through the Tableland, all up there. All the mob itself are now going to reassert the sovereignty for the betterment of all humans, not just our lot. We've got to consider where's the homeland of the Australians. And that's where the pseudo-law issue comes in for me. I'm getting really annoyed with the pseudo-law rubbish, the sovereign citizen movement, because it's bringing us down. It's making the Aboriginal people look stupid and that they're the problem. The problem is the white fellas, you know, the Australians. And I'm going to use this, and people may laugh at black and white, but I'm going to use this colour article. They believe they're a superior race to Commonwealth of Australia. No more. They're definitely not. So, you know, we're all on here to do the right thing for each other. We're all humans. We're all born, we all live, and we all die here. So we've got to do the right thing. So pseudo-law, it doesn't have a place on this country.
Yeah, I'm going to refer to the Bible. The good book says when Jesus was before Caesar, he never broke the law. So he never broke Jewish law, which is his tribal law, and he never broke the state law, which was the Roman law at the time. And that's how we got to be, like we not breaking any law. We never come to destroy the law. We come to fulfill the law. That's what he said. So this is what the Yidinji Nation is built on. And at the time, the tribe or the people wanted to, they asked whether they were, you know, Caesar or Pontius Pilate at the time said, who do you want to release? You want me to release Jesus or you want me to release Barabbas? Barabbas was the one that wanted to fight against the Romans and destroy their kingdom or their state. And they've been saying, we want Barabbas. So that's what we're saying. That sovereign citizen movement is in that line of thinking. And that Barabbas was a fighting spirit. The thing is, with sovereignty, you don't have to fight. You got to just walk in that way. Am I talking truth there, Colin, or would you?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Gunyara mentioned before a homeland. You know, Gunyara, what's the criteria for a nation or a group to act as a nation? Like, you know, homeland is obviously one of the big things in Australia that it was questionable for Australia. They don't actually have a homeland. But yeah, you know, the other aspects are citizenship. Correct me if I'm wrong. To act internationally as with a foreign authority. Am I on the right track?
If you look at the Montevideo Convention 1930, it'll give you four things. You've got to have a population. You've got to have a territory. You've got to have a system of governance. And you've got to have the ability to act in international affairs. Yidinji's got all of that. We've always had that. We've never gone away from it.
Australia's got three of those at least.
They don't have a territory. Because if we own our place, where's their place? You know, and this is what I keep coming back to. Where's the homeland of the Australians? What are we going to do with the Australians?
Well, pseudo-law and PMAs fit into that same category. They don't have a territory either.
None of them have any. No, even the Hutt River province, we actually rang him up going back many years ago. Like all this rot you hear, it's just one after another and it's getting very frustrating to say the least. Because Aboriginal people are being conned to go down these roads and they just get burnt with it. It's just stupidity. Now, when Australia was first formed, the Commonwealth of Australia, it was the white Australia. And that's why I use black and white, you know. Forget about the colour of your skin. But
well, that's their wording, isn't it? The
it
white
absolutely
Australia.
Absolutely is. The white Australia. You go and look it up, the white Australia policy. Prime Minister Deakin at the time said this is going to be the homeland of the Britishers, the white people. This is the white Australia. That was in 1941, so that's all recent. They're saying this, not us. We're just saying we're all humans and we all live here together. But then you go down into this rabbit hole of BS and rubbish. And, you know, where do people go and get educated about this? You know, like the pseudo-law stuff, the sovereign citizen stuff, the stuff that is actually hurting, and I mean it is hurting the Aboriginal people more. They've already been hurt, you know, like our uncle's here, you know, his father got shot in the foot, you know, that'll heal up. But the wounds that are caused by this stuff, by this it's affecting when they go back and start drinking again. Or, you know, what's the good of us? We've tried to do this PMA stuff, the Private Members Association. We've gone down this sovereign citizen movement. We might as well go back and drink. And that's worse than getting shot in the foot, by the way, because now it becomes intergenerational stress, you know. So they've got to stop this rot. The government, the Commonwealth of Australia, must crack down on its crazy citizens doing this crazy stuff, because they're harming those people who haven't ceded their sovereignty, who haven't had their sovereignty extinguished. And, you know, they're causing great harm, more harm than just shooting at them.
Well, like you said before, it was one of the criteria for identifying the craziness is this big offer of money and all, you know, people coming up front with that.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's the money. And everyone wants to get the greed of money, which is stupid, you know. How do we live on this country together? We've always been here. Yidinji has been here forever and a day, and it's going to be here forever and a day. Like Uncle, his children, their children's children. It's just going to go on forever and a day. It's not going to die out. The law will never die unless they nuke the joint and the whole lot's over. So we're going to always be here. But how are we going to now coexist with the Commonwealth of Australia, with this other thing whose sovereignty is... The sovereignty of Australia is real, by the way. The people, the Australians hand up some of their God-given right to participate in Australia. So Australia is real. Just like some of the Yidinji have handed up some of their authority to the Yidinji government. So it's real. It's actually mentioned, I was discussing earlier there in a Senate committee hearing last year, I think it was the 8th of June 23, that Yidinji government got a mention in that inquiry into UNDRIP, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People, where Tony McAvoy, who's no fool, by the way, he's quite a highly regarded silk, did mention Yidinji government twice in his testimonial. So we are real, they know about us, and they know that we're here as a government. We're not anti-government, we're not sovereign citizen rubbish. We're just starting to reassert the sovereignty that's always been here, but we're trying to do it now for the betterment of everyone. And by the way, you mentioned money, for not one Australian dollar. Yeah. Not one.
I think it's important to remind people that the very reason I went down this track, I couldn't use the Australian persona doing it. So I, in my best, way, try to act with honour and integrity and give it all back. You can only do that on this track by building it from the Yidinji side. And so it's because of that, and the wisdom of the elders, the Yidinji side is building up so Australia can transition into a Yidinji space and coexist, for example. So that's a very important thing. It's one thing to, you know, beat the magistrate's court system or whatever it is and beat your chest and saying, you can't catch me or whatever. It's another thing to say thank you to the magistrate, which we did. We said thank you for upholding the law. And that was a very important thing to say, that, you know, we're not here to destroy the law. We're coming to fulfil it. But anyway, so that's just you can't hunt with the hounds and run with the foxes. You either play for one team at that time or one team on this side. You can't play for the same both sides at the same time. It's impossible. So when you're using your Yidinji identity, uphold Yidinji law. When you're using an Australian one, uphold Australian law.
Well, yeah, this issue with Australia not having a land to claim legally, there is no legal land claimed. And realistically, they're the ones inspiring PMAs and pseudo-law, because they're saying that we don't have land. No, Australia doesn't got anything, so you don't need it either to stand up and make up your own law, because that's, in a sense, what Australia is doing.
Absolutely so. You know, there was a paper or a submission, or going back a couple of years ago, from a couple of the academics about that, regarding what Australia is actually doing. Australia is doing other stuff that it shouldn't be doing.
Anyway, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition. We'll have plenty more after the break.
Hey, what's up? This is Justin Wellington, and you are listening to your number one station, BBM 98.7 FM. Much love.
Bo Jackson, baby. My homie Justin Wellington.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Murimu here with you, Black Law Tribal Edition. We're just talking about pseudo-law before Ganyara, and we heard that interesting excerpt from the ABC. I guess one of the things that Bumi's had to go, by the way, so we won't hear from him for the rest of the show, unfortunately. He's doing some business in around town here. But Ganyara, the pseudo law thing is really people, and we've seen it not only in this office, but we've seen it with other nations that have been infiltrated, perhaps, or just going about. I mean, we didn't get it right the first time either, but you know, if you go through these things and you learn them pretty quick, smart, that's a load of rubbish or not.
A lot of trial and tribulation, of course, like everything. You know, we're breaking new ground as we go. And I got a feeling, my gut feeling is we're probably first in the world what we're doing. We've actually broken the chessboard apart. You know, we're not just moving pawns about. We've actually torn the board apart, and we're going to rebuild the board our way. You know, if you look at the issues around the world, especially international law, there was one of the Chinese foreign minister, I think it was, made a comment a couple of years ago about everyone being inclusive to be in the international law. Well, if we haven't done a treaty with Australia and they aren't our representative body, because that's what a treaty would do, would make Australia to act for and on behalf of us, you know, so we won't disappear and they won't disappear, but they will be our appointed body at international law, not domestic law, not our world. So do we have input into international law if we're not represented, if we're not there? How do we have an input into that? So this is how we've got to interface with the rest of the world. We've got to build this thing to come to. Pseudo-law is not the answer. A lot of people are getting this so mixed up and so lost. What they're doing is they're using some make-believe document that they can purport to be the authority on the piece of land, when really, all they've got to do is go back to their original law, the one that was there first, the one that's still there to this very day. And by the way, native title determinations give clear example as to if that law still exists to this very day, and on ours, it does. In our world, they said Yidinji have a system of land tenure, they have a system of dispute resolution, they have a system of authority and governance. That's not us saying that. We knew we had it. But the Commonwealth of Australia can now recognise it through that federal court determination for Yidinji territory. They've also said in another one there that our law hasn't gone away. It had to be modified in a form to accommodate the settlers on our country. So they know we're here. They know our law's here. We don't need to go into pseudo-law, into the world of BS, and make-believe documents that come from the US or come from anywhere else in the world, because ours have always been here for the last 60, 70,000, 80,000 years from time immemorial, I like to say. You know, we can't put a year on it, but we've been here forever and a day, and it's still here.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, you know, we can only say go and do it yourself, basically, but some people want to look at those options, and fair enough. That's you know, they're going to have to have a look at it and even consider some of those things, because on the outside, that's what pseudo-law is all about. It looks right, but when you dig down underneath the layer, it's absolutely got no foundation at law. So it's easier for us to say we're doing it this way because it works for us, and it's codifying what already, like you said, exists here on this land. So that's where you don't talk about UCC law or this, that law or that law. No, we're talking about Yidinji law, and how does that tribal law now move to a piece of paper talking about Yidinji law? Nothing about, like I said, these United States Securities Exchange Commission and all that kind of, Australia's just a, you know, on the ABC thing that we just played earlier, it said, that Australia's just a company listed on the US Stock Exchange, and the bloke said, well, that's because it has to facilitate some international exchange point. But you were going to say something.
Look, let's keep it very simple. Keep it so simple. UNDRIP, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People, is talking about us, not to us. We didn't write UNDRIP. We didn't write the Uluru Statement. They wrote that, and they're talking about someone else, and they talk about us. Now, they talk about us as a sovereign nation. Yeah, we're the first sovereign nations on the country. We'll accept that. I'm not going to argue with that. Sovereign nations have the ability to make law. Hang on, what did Justice Dowsett say in the Yidinji determination, the native title one? Got a system of authority and decision-making. Man, if that ain't government, what is authority and decision-making? Hang on, they said you've got a system of dispute resolution. Because you've got laws, you've got to be able to adjudicate on those laws if they're right or wrong. Hang on, that's a dispute resolution. I don't agree with that, or this is wrong. That's a court. That's where you can have your say in the Yidinji court. They said you've got a system of land tenure. But that's got nothing to do with the Queensland Lands Department, because we rang them and said, how do you get our land? They said, we took it. Hang on, they're talking about law, they're talking about society, they're talking about everything that makes up or comprises the Yidinji Nation, the first sovereign nation on this country that hadn't ceded its sovereignty and hadn't been extinguished through conquest, war, or anything else. We're still here. As they say, sovereignty is not ceded. And it coexists with that of Australia.
Yeah, and look, one of the things, one of the easiest ways to recognise or identify that is that if someone says we've got sovereignty, we've got the solution, and we've got all this access to this international money, then that's a dead giveaway, because under sovereignty, you create your own money. So Udinji has its own stamps. It has its own central bank. It has its own money that it has created through the legislation. And, you know, we had someone come on and say, oh, we can transfer 500 million euros into your account. And are you sitting down for that? Are you sitting down? We've got some big news for you. And, you know, we're still waiting a year and a half later. But we just said, no, that's okay. We're developing our money. The Europeans can have that money, or you can give it to other people who may need it more than us.
Until there's a treaty in place, until there's a formal agreement between us and the other sovereignty that coexists on our country, until there's that treaty with the international world, we can't utilise their stuff. We actually build our own money. Oh, you mean our Currency Act, our Reserve Bank Act? You mean that stuff that we passed under legislation in our government, under our system of authority decision-making, that one? We passed this legislation on purpose to do that, not only to facilitate trade amongst ourselves, but importantly is to continue the underwriting of Australia. The one that they mentioned in the Mabo determination, they said the Aboriginals underwrote the Australia. We are the underwriters, we are the bankers. And now how do they repay that debt? Because Article 28 of UNDRIP says either give the place back if you've taken it, give it back, give them somewhere equal, or pay for the place. They can't pay for this place. They know they can't afford it. We talked to Senator Waters going back, 7 years now. We said, look, if you can afford to pay us back, can you afford to pay the next lot back? The Kunjin mob, they're next door, or the Kokoyalanji mob, can you afford? And she said, no, we can't afford it. We don't have enough money in Australia to give you money of equal value to your land. And then what is the value of their money if they can just print money up? What's the good of it? So we said, okay, you can't pay us back. We're going to go the other way. We'll continue the underwriting of Australia. We'll give you some of our money to let you be here on our territory. We'll continue the underwriting, and we won't charge you one Australian dollar for it. This is the important part. It's not about the money. If someone comes along with a big wad of money saying, here, I'd be very wary, because the only way at present we can do this, like the Udinji world, is through the Udinji Development Bank, where there is an exchange mechanism to get Udinji dollars to operate in the Udinji territory, and then you convert it back to Australian dollars or euro, whatever it may be, to operate in the international world. But there's no treaty yet. And this is what a treaty will sort out. We will appoint Australia to act for and on behalf of our mob at the international level, not anywhere else, not domestically.
Yeah, I think it's really important to build those institutions. And Ural, and we're just talking that before and during the break there about, you know, when we're talking about education and people are saying this, that and the other, there's Queensland education, there's a federal government legislation to do with education inside of Australia, but Udinji's got its own curriculum, and that's also being developed all the time. But I think it's really important that those things we're talking about are built, are homegrown, rather than saying, oh, we want this and that, and we want to change Queensland law when it comes to homeschooling or whatever it is. I think Queensland is having... You know, it's got its own jurisdiction, and we don't have an issue with that. I think the majority of the Udinji Nation and the Udinji government, especially, is in consensus when we're saying we want to use Udinji sovereignty to support Queensland, to support Australia, to support the courts and the other institutions and all the persons and everything else there. But it doesn't mean we forfeit the right to create our own education system and our own version of homeschooling, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's the opening statement on the Udinji website, is securing the past and settling the past and securing the future. And, you know, that's a great example, as you said, and as Gunyara said before, about, you know, we've written our own legislation, our own acts around education, around banking, around all of that. And, you know, it still comes back to this idea that that is troubling, that the topic of a lot of the discussion today has been around other law or other groups attempting to have their own law. And, you know, the example that you've been giving there is, you know, one of the first things that you might see in something that's going to lead you down the wrong track is the offer of trinkets or money or whatever it might be. And, you know, I think second to that is, you know, the second question is then obviously, you know, whose country are you on? Do you have a connection to country to offer, you know? And this is why Australia should be concerned with, you know, they've got obviously these pseudo-law and PMAs coming through and trying to exert some sort of authority who don't have any connection to territory or country, but neither does Australia. So, you know, Yidinji is offering to secure the future. It's offering that treaty forward for them, for Australia to secure its future. Right now, it's up for grabs with other groups like these pseudo-laws and so forth coming through.
Yeah, I do appreciate those comments, guys. The most important one being is that, you know, the elders have trusted us to move forward and, you know, in their absolute wisdom, making it frictionless. And when you often hear the phrase that the pen is mightier than the sword, we know that's not true in some sense, in a physical sense. I mean, if you went to a fight with a pencil and a sword, you're not going to win. But when we're talking about the legal sense, the written law, then it is. It makes absolute sense that we don't have a standing army or things like that. And I guess you already have one here. That's the Australian Defence Force, and that should work for us and to protect us. And that's what building this treaty is all about, Ganyara.
Wow, what an idea, having Australia represent us at the international world. That means defend the territory. You're dead right. Now, last year, coincidentally, you know, we were down at the ANU, walking out one night there, and a woman who I didn't realise at the time had worked for the Federal Attorney General's office, she said, you know, you've got every right to do a deal with China, do a treaty with China. I nearly fell over because we said that 7 years ago to Senator Waters. We might do a deal with China. If you don't want the deal with us, we still retain the right. Now, they said you've got a right to treaty. Of course we've got a right. We know we've got it, and we haven't done anything yet, so we've got a right to exercise that treaty however we see fit, and we'll do what is best for the mob, for the best for our lot. Now, if China comes along and offers a better deal, this is something Australia's got to be very careful of, going down their state-based treaty rubbish, because the states aren't sovereign enough to offer treaties, by the way. That's federal court or high court ruling. Well, maybe China might offer a better deal. I just can't speak Chinese, so to me that's not a good option at this stage. But if they offer a better deal to educate me and look after the mob, whatever it may be, then we might have to go down that road. Now, we're offering this to Australia now for over, 2017? We walked into the big building down there in Canberra and said, look, here's an MOU, the roadmap forward to enter into a treaty. Let's go down this road together, work together on this, what's best for both lots, yours and us. And so far, they're floundering with it. They don't know which way to go. And I can see why, because they're going to lose control of certain elements of the world, which are the Aboriginal people, the Islander people, because they do have a right to go back to their sovereignty that hasn't been ceded or lost. So that's up for grabs there. So we're offering to Australia, it's the preferred supplier of a treaty, but it's not the only one. And this is something that's very important. We have this right that we can exercise at any time. Now, we don't have to treaty if we don't want. We can start to assert ourselves, but to me that doesn't make sense, because if you read UNDRIP, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People, it's a pretty good roadmap forward to appoint Australia for international issues. We look after our domestic affairs, they look after the international affairs, which are anything outside of our boundary that includes Australians. Now, Australians are foreign to us, so they're overseas to us. But, you know, this is the nuances at law. They're foreign to us. And we want to incorporate the Australians in our world. We want them to be part of our world, but they've got to understand what the legal ramifications are and the legal situation is. Now, if we do a deal with China, where's Australia's homeland? They've got to tear a piece out of the map, which is Yidinji-sized, put the Chinese flag on it. And I don't think we want to go there yet, but Australia wants to get a wriggle on to come and talk properly about this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, in layman's terms, you know, we've got plenty of women chasing me. Who want to marry me? Who are going to do the best deal for me? Really, that's what it comes down to. But I'm not saying I've got plenty of women chasing me, because I don't. And I don't have plenty of men chasing me either, just quietly while I can knock that out of the space here. But, yeah, it's basically Yidinji can now offer the treaty. Who wants to marry Yidinji? And Australia is there And there's been this de facto relationship for a while now, but it needs to be formalised. You know, I was thinking about this earlier, but tribal law is, you can describe it as, you know, you're going to that woman's father and saying, hey, which way I want to ask your permission to marry your daughter. And he might say, yeah, that's good. I agree with it. Shake hands. But the actual physical part of the treaty, or the paper one, is the marriage certificates. That's where the man and the woman sign together. So if I can use that as way to paint the story, that's where we're at. And, I think it's really exciting that all the Indigenous nations on this continent and potentially worldwide, because, you know, they say that the Commonwealth of Australia is the last one out of the Commonwealth to have a treaty with the First Peoples here. So we're trying to help with that. So, the nations do have the upper hand, and play it correctly, and I think everyone wins out of it.
Yeah, look, it is an international affair. Let's look at New Zealand, for example. That's a perfect one. They got the Treaty of Waitangi. They had the commission done a report on that in 2015. Yeah, the treaty's real. It's a legitimate document, but it's between the British and the Maoris. Nothing to do with the New Zealanders. They're all foreign to Britain, so they're not British subjects. And if they're not party to the treaty, well, what are they talking about the treaty for? They acknowledge it's real. So they aren't covered by the treaty. It's between the British, Maoris. The Maoris should ring up the British, say, hey, King of the UK, send your warships down. These New Zealanders will be in a pain. So they need to negotiate a treaty at that level there, even where the Treaty of Waitangi is. Now, the Treaty of Waitangi was only the top island, and not all of them, by the way, not all the mob there. So the southern island's got no treaty. Same in Canada. Now, the legal entities have changed over the years. Back in 19, with the Statute of Westminster 31, the Crown become divisible. So even the Treaty of Waitangi had to be renegotiated when the Crown become divisible. Something had changed in the treaty, so that should have been renegotiated then. But the treaty is real, it's still standing, but the New Zealanders aren't British subjects because of that divisible crown. They should have renegotiated that then. Same in Canada. What about Japan? You know, the Ainu people up in the northern part of Japan, do they have a deal with the local Japanese government? No, they don't. So it's global. It is a global issue. They're all trying to go down like the Sami way, but the Sami have the Norwegian or the Finnish identity. They've got to create their own government and create their own identity to be separate and distinct from the Northern European people there, those nations.
Yeah, so something similar is what ATSIC was. You had votes and stuff, but because ATSIC was created inside of Australia, John Howard could say, yep, no more, close it all up. And, that's Australia's right to do that, because the same way in Barcelona with the Catalonian Parliament, yes, they have a distinct identity and a kingdom before that, but they under a Spanish constitution, and the Spanish constitution created the parliament that they sit in, so they can't go and break away from that. Well, they can attempt to, but it's always going to be that what we have here is that 97% elephant and the 3% mouse, and they don't control that. So it's one of the things where you have to play it smart, and it's so much more easier to build your world because it already exists, one, and two, all you're doing is codifying it and writing it down for the rest of the world to see.
You mentioned Catalonia. That's a good example. These are Spanish citizens of Catalonian origin wanting to break away from Spain with the Catalonian, with the Spanish identity. They want to take it away and become Catalonia. Hang on a sec, that's treasonous. They deserve to be punished, the full force of the law, to try and break up the ship. If they're going to break away from Catalonia, if they're going to break away from Spain, so have your citizen back, have your legal identity, have it back, put it under that world. We're going to create our own indigenous one, just like Yidinji has done. And we're right with what we've done, because we've been told in no uncertain terms at numerous times by numerous constitutional lawyers, we're right, we're correct. We're down at ANU last year. They said, use a right, use a correct. What you're doing is right. We haven't broken away with the Australian identity. We don't want the Australian identity. We don't want to participate in Australia. We don't participate in Yidinji through the Australian identity. That's why we left it behind. Have your identity back. Remember, we're God's property. We don't belong to anyone. You know, our body is his stuff. So we said, okay, have your identity back, or you can leave it there, and I'll participate in the Yidinji world through the Yidinji identity that's created subject to the legislation of the Yidinji nation, the sovereign Yidinji government. Yidinji government come about because the elders in their wisdom, back in, you know, going back over a decade now, said, okay, we've got to create something equal to Australia that's not of Australia. That's like, you know, so the Catalonians can do that over there, create their thing, totally separate to Spain, and let their identity sit back there and create their own legal identity for them to allow this, the human to participate in the Catalonian society, just as we have done. It's global.
You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today, thanks to our friends at Bumabipra Media, 98.7 FM, here in the city of Ghimoy. And if you're listening to this inside of Australia, it's probably via the National Indigenous Radio Service. Wherever you are listening, we say thank you for supporting the show, and thank you for those tribes and the nations that allow us to travel using your spectrum with the digital representations of our voices. We'll be back after the break for some final comments.
Blessed love. This is Jimmy Cliff on Radio BBM. You stay tuned now.
Welcome back. The show is nearly done. The year is nearly done, lads, and if I can say that. And the thing is now, I guess, some final comments as to maybe something you'd like to see transpire next year in terms of something big that you're working on, Yurilum or Ganyara. Some final comments and maybe some predictions or some projects that you'd like to see to come to fruition next year.
Been around a project that is going to come to fruition next year, where there will be the opportunity for nations throughout the continent to connect and contact and understand the pitfalls of, you know, going down the wrong path, the pseudo laws, the PMS, all these sorts of PMS, not PMA, sorry about that. Hey, cause the same effect. To that end, I think it will be very helpful for other nations to know and decide themselves which way to go.
Ganyara.
Yeah, look, if we were wrong, we would have been hung, drawn and quartered long ago. Let's keep it simple. You know, this pseudo-law rot is so complicated and so full of BS, it can't be any more simple than what the Yidinji has done. A search of sovereignty. As the justice said in that Boulogne Shire Council case, why did you come to my court for if you wanted to seek justice? Where's your court? Where's your government? Where's your world? Okay, we're back. We're doing our stuff, you know. So we're just doing exactly that. We're going to assert our sovereignty the simple way, not the complicated. You've got to go and fill in a form and turn around circles backwards and all this sort of rubbish they talk you want you to do. Keep it simple. Let's do it. Let's set an example. And for next year, by the way, I'm hoping to try and get a panel together on pseudo-law for the intertribal forum that's coming up in August. So if we can get a panel for that to discuss the issues of pseudo-law and all that rot, to educate people that's all BS. We don't need to go down there. Let's keep it simple. Let's come together. Let's be here as one lot looking after each other, including the Australians. They've got every right to be looked after. Under our Yidinji way, we would look after them normally, but that's what we want to do, is try and help the Australians. But if they don't want it, you know, you can't force the horse to drink water once you get into the water hole. It's up to them.
Yeah, I guess that's true. The international community is constantly looking at the Yidinji Nation. This is my 20 cents for the day, 20 cents Yidinji, that is. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the world of digital money will change next year. There are a number of different camps and platforms that are being promoted. You may hear of crypto and central bank digital currencies. Tokenization is a big one. The simple part of it is that the nations, the tribal nations, that is, the continuing pre-1770 Indigenous nations here on the Australian continent, have a sovereign wealth capacity that they can use to benefit their society and the people that visit their territory. That's the message from our government, is that, you know, with all the promises of international money and secret Swiss bank accounts and this, that and the other, you know, we've heard it all before. No one's ever delivered on it. People that are talking about it are still talking about it 10, 15 years later. You know, if they did work it out, maybe they've sworn to secrecy or taken some sort of oath, Whereas we're talking about it openly here for the public to hear, the whole world, on how to go about governing your nation. That's the difference. We actually, there is no secrets here on the Yidinji territory, because we know that the boss is watching. So everything's being recorded. So ASIO, you can record it, Mossad and everyone else, you can record it, but ultimately God's recording everything. And so that's what I think it comes down to. Don't be afraid to head down this track, and you'll make mistakes. Everyone does, but the best part about it is that if you have if you do it in good faith, you're going to come to a position where you said it earlier, Ganyara, is, you know, what is the law? We know that there's legislation, but really it's about, you know, loving your neighbour as yourself, looking after mates, and anyone that comes to your place, look after them. Let them know what the law is, and you know, give your mind, body, and your soul. That's God's creation to the boss. And anyway, the Internet Tribal Foreign Affairs Council Forum will be happening in mid-August, and we'll have a number of exciting announcements, I guess, in the new year about that. I think there's going to be a major shift in recognition and acknowledgement. You know, it is my wish and desire that the Yidinji personality and identity, the passport, will be, in the next year or two, be usable in terms of travelling through different universes and like space travel. Like if you want to go to Europe or other places like that, it might work, considering that they already accept our documentation. But it's Australia is the one that's lagging. I think that's where things will pick up pretty quickly. If they don't, then, like you said, there's plenty of other women out there that want it. So the marriage and the wedding and, you know, everything. And but anyway, that's it for us here at Black Law Tribal Edition. It is the second last program for the year. We do have another one for next week. But anyway, may God's peace be upon you, wherever you are listening to this show, in the almighty name of Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus Christ, the Anointed One from Nazareth. And it's written that he is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. And he's ending off the show right now. We'll catch you next week. Go.
Trying to live with me a hoodlum, trying to say I got no good blood in my veins. I'ma say I'm a good man. My melanin's got you feeling some kind of way.
I guess my color and my lingo equivalent to a pistol. Yeah, can't even shop at the mall. Stigma's got my people not shopping at all. We start emerging, then emergency call. The feds are pressed, what's the urgency for? Shopping centers we cannot enter. An open letter for society's sake. Innocent people that society break. If it's required, then they hiding the tape. Roles reverse, ain't waste time, they providing a name. It's a goddamn shame. Treated like aliens, people of power equal fake aliens. Just the system is failing us, FML to Australia. The news done, got us screwed. They feed you lies, you call it truth. I win, you lose, no need for proof. At 3% of Australia, what's the ultimate failure? Everything that I said is exactly what they gon' say to you. I told you the truth hurt. It's my color and my lingo equivalent to a pistol.
Trying to live with me a hood, trying to say I got no good blood in my veins.
I see my fair share of unfair, look at what you done here.
I'ma say I'm a good man, my melanin's got you feeling some kind of way.
I guess my color and my lingo